Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm Tom Gilson. On today's episode, we bring you a radio interview between the host of the show Coffee with Creamer, Barry Creamer, and Jonathan Witt, co-author of the new book Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Creamer is a philosopher and historian and the president of Criswell College. His program airs weekday evenings on KCBI Radio Dallas and as the Coffee with Creamer podcast, available at iTunes. Dr. Witt joined Dr. Creamer in the studio at Criswell College in Dallas.
Welcome to Coffee with Creamer, at the intersection of culture and a Christian worldview. Every day we seek out compelling conversations, looking at what Scripture has to say about everything from art and politics to theology and philosophy. So grab a mug, settle in, and listen up. It's time for Coffee with Creamer.
There are so many different fascinating topics to cover. If you're going to say that your Christianity, your faith informs everything about your understanding of the world, how you live in it, how you live it out, then you just never run out of topics to discuss. One we don't get to talk about nearly as often as I would like to is the intersection between science and religion. We do it every once in a while. We come across it for one reason or another. But my favorite opportunity to discuss that topic comes when we have someone on from the Discovery Institute, and today in particular, Jonathan Witt, who is senior fellow with the Center for Science and Culture. Dr. Witt, first of all, did I get the title close to right?
That is close to right, yeah. Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture. I'm a senior fellow there.
All right. Right, perfect. So senior and author of a book that's just recently out, or co-author, I guess. You worked with the other fellow to get it co-authored. Written. So the book is called Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design, which I want to talk about in a couple of minutes. But, you know, just it's really nice to have you on the program. It's good to be able to talk with you. I'm grateful for the work y'all do. You actually have a big day coming up. ID Education Day, I think you called it.
Yeah, here in Dallas, ID Education Day. It's March 23rd.
Okay.
It's going to be at Park Cities Baptist.
There you go.
And that's a Friday, March 23rd, and it starts at 9:45 and goes till 2:30.
Okay, so give me an idea of who you're hoping will attend or what you've created.
Well, since it's on a Friday during the school year, we're not expecting it's not designed for public school kids, but private school kids, homeschool kids, adults that just want to learn more about intelligent design. So.
Okay.
So just go to discovery.org /ID, and you'll be able to find out more about it.
Okay, perfect. And you said March 23rd. Does it cost anything to come?
It's either, I can't remember, it's either like $10 or free.
It's a nominal fee to free, somewhere in that range.
Yeah.
Okay. So definitely worth showing up for. Anyway, great guys who do a lot of excellent work in a lot of different directions. Now, your work, particularly in this case, is about a Finnish scientist who has taken up this position of intelligent design and has faced some consequences for it. And, obviously we're in favor of defending something, whether you are rewarded for it or punished for it. It's the right thing to defend the truth. But anyway, it's an interesting story, and that's what I want to come to you and ask about. But on the way there, people need to figure out who you are as well and sort of who the Discovery Institute is. People are, you know, what you guys do. So first of all, with you, what's your background and your interest on the science side and then on the relationship between that and the culture as a whole? How'd you get into this?
Yeah, good question. I'm definitely the round peg in the square hole of the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. I have an English background. I was a professor. Uh-huh. The way I found my way into the design movement, the design argument is that I was teaching logical fallacies in some of my composition logic classes. I also had my PhD was in aesthetics, so art, the nature of art and beauty. And I noticed that a lot of the Darwinists, when they would make arguments against design, they would make these bad designer arguments. Well, God wouldn't make a panda's thumb be non-opposable. He would give them the absolute best, you know, opposable thumb possible if he were an all-wise God. And those arguments struck me as very strange, as if God had to make every single creature maximally
exactly
optimal, you know, in every way. So it was the kind of aesthetic arguments that even some of my opponents in literary aesthetics, you know, some of the postmodern crazy guys, they wouldn't have thought to make anything an argument that crazy or stupid. And so I got drawn in. I did an article in Touchstone
to
magazine, and it caught the eye of Discovery Institute, and I ended up becoming a fellow. And I've some of the articles I've written on my own, but I've done a lot of co-writing and editing, and a lot of projects, film projects, documentaries, the Privileged Planet documentary.
Nice.
It was on PBS. So it's been a fun ride. It was a great, I recommend it as a midlife crisis.
There's one way to get into it. I do want to talk about the issues themselves, and it is funny how those arguments come out. I heard many, many times in the different perspectives that came in my long, too long education, that basic argument that they held the view that evolution was a sufficing mechanism. So things are alive, so obviously they evolved to be that. But God would have been an optimizing mechanism. But they only think of him as acting within the mechanism of the designs they're talking about, the way they think things ought to look or the way they ought to be optimized. It is a crazy argument when you,
right.
when
and,
you think
and
about
it. Right, and
it
also leads them to, they talk about, the design argument is a God of the gaps argument, which isn't true.
Which I want to come back
to. Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Also.
But but they often put Darwinism in the gaps because they say,
obviously.
They say, oh, look, there's some DNA. It doesn't look like it does anything. It must be junk left over from the evolutionary trial and error process. Mm-hmm. Well, now they know the ENCODE project, some other major projects have shown that much of that DNA they thought was junk is doing wonderful, important stuff. It just wasn't doing what they thought DNA could only do.
They fill in the blanks with their theory.
Yeah, they fill in the blanks
in the
with junk.
Way they could,
so it misled them, whereas there were design theorists saying, I think this is going to turn out to do something
have
valuable.
Some purpose.
And so there was a prediction where the Darwinists were wrong and the design theorists were right. They often complain, well, you don't make predictions. Well, we made a prediction there.
Okay.
And we were right.
So jumping to the book itself, which is Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design, tell me about this scientist. His name is Matti Laisola, right?
Yeah, Matti Laisola.
So tell me about him.
He is a Finnish scientist, and we met through this project. He was already a friend of Discovery Institute, Center for Science and Culture. He was the founding editor of a journal that isn't under Discovery Institute, but some of the scientists that are at Discovery Institute were behind it. The journal was called Biocomplexity. He's the founding editor of that. He is a very distinguished enzyme scientist. He's worked in industry. His teams have led to patents. Some of the stuff they're doing very science fiction-y. He's been at the University of Helsinki Technology. He's been in Switzerland. He's got like 140 peer-reviewed papers. But early in his career, he was a thoroughgoing Darwinist, as you would expect in Northern Europe. But there was a visit by the Christian apologist and thinker Francis Schaeffer.
There you go.
And Francis Schaeffer basically woke him up to that he had this worldview that was doing a lot of the work for him. And Francis Schaeffer pointed out, a lot of times you know there's a worldview at work when people get really touchy on subjects where you would expect them just to kind of have a reasonable conversation.
Yep.
And he thought back and says, I got really touchy a couple times when a friend or a student challenged me about evolutionary theory. And so he took a look in the mirror, and then he started revisiting the evidence, and he started seeing the evidence for design.
It's really funny, isn't it? I mean, because it is true in a lot of different communities, including the scientific community, that when a paradigm is threatened, it is circle the wagons and kill all the enemy. Kind of mentality.
It's you know, human nature. Scientists, when they put on a white lab coat, human nature doesn't disappear.
No, that's exactly right. And in a moment, I want to come back and talk some more about that. In just a second, my guest is Jonathan Witt, Dr. Jonathan Witt, who's a senior fellow with the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute. Back in just a second. Speaking today with Dr. Jonathan Witt about a scientist from Finland, Matti Laisola, who has taken up the intelligent design cause. And on the way to that, we're talking about a book which is about that. So One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. The book's called Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Dr. Witt, we were throwing around some terms. I just want to make sure everybody's familiar with them. You mentioned intelligent design. We've batted it around 1,000 times with different audiences. But, you know, people driving around don't necessarily know what that means. So give us a big picture. What is intelligent design? What's that about?
Yeah, the elevator quick explanation.
That's the one.
Is the theory of intelligent design holds that certain features of the natural world are best explained by reference to an intelligent cause rather than to some purely natural process, such as Darwinian evolution.
Perfect.
So it could be focused on biology, but it also, you could make a design argument, an intelligent design argument, say, for the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics and chemistry.
Right.
And by the way, there are Nobel laureates in physics and astronomy that say intelligent design is the best explanation for fine-tuning. So that's an intelligent design argument.
Now, you've got this book that's out, Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Presumably, you know, you have an audience in mind when you write the book. I know that there are homeschool parents and there are private school teachers and there are scientists who are, probably quietly faithful in their obedience to Christ and their desire to serve him, but they serve in a lab, they work in a lab somewhere, and they just don't get into this argument. They want to keep their job. They don't want to make their boss mad. They might be interested in the book just to discover some of the scientific stuff that's in it. Is that your audience? Is it the scientist? Is it a lay person? Who is it?
It is both scientists and lay people, and that makes you can't have everybody be an audience. But I think in this case we do, because Mati is a highly distinguished bioscientist who really knows his stuff, and so there's not going to be a sloppy argument in there about, oh, I was kind of spitballing it in terms of my understanding of the cellular realm. He knows his stuff, okay? And then I came in working alongside him to make sure that the argument, the wording is as accessible as possible. We use a lot of illustrations. We unpack some of the technical terminology. We take our time. And so we're hoping that anybody from a very bright, a bright high school student to a scientist, interested in these issues, will be able to pull something from this book.
Have you had people preview it, endorse it, respond to it? Any feedback?
Yeah, we have a number of 5-star reviews at Amazon.
All right.
The one I'm most proudest of is the one and only non-5-star review, which is a 1-star review from this Darwinist that no matter what we write, no matter how good it is, no matter how he'll come in and hammer it with a 1-star review. So
that's a badge of honor.
Yeah, we're drawing some fire, so we must be threatening them.
That's exactly what you want. You should have a star that you can pin on your jacket and say, he attacked us. Yeah. We're good to go.
Yeah,
so. We must have said the right thing. So, I mean, this is good. And the age range for a person who can make sense of it, I mean, if a parent's listening to this, for instance, obviously they can read it. They'll make sense of it.
Yeah.
Can they give it to a junior high kid? Can they give it to
a very, very bright, science-minded, older junior high kid?
Okay.
But the mainly, I would say high school and up.
All right, very good. I got the idea. And obviously, they can get it at Amazon. I'm assuming he's just out broadly. Mm-hmm. They can find it.
Yeah, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Discovery Institute Press. You can find,
there you go,
find more about it there.
Okay, so let's talk about what you're trying to accomplish in the book. And a little. So you talked about Mati Laisala a little bit more, Dr. Laisala, and the work that he did in the past as a scientist and all of that. I want to come back to this. So he changes his view over time. And I read a little bit about the stuff that he went through himself in that journey from being a staunch evolutionist to a person who actually said some of the evidence seems to point to an intelligence behind this. And by the way, I'm always saying to audiences, Jonathan Witt's my guest today, by the way. Jonathan, I'm always saying to audiences, the fact that evolution exists as a theory is proof that creation testifies to the intelligent, the appearance of an intelligent design, because evolution is the explanation. It's the way of saying, no, there was no intelligent design. It happened this way. Even though it looks intelligent, it happened this way instead. At least you have to admit that you start from a premise as a human being looking at creation and saying, wow, this thing really looks designed. It looks like somebody knew what they were doing when they put it together.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard Dawkins, the famous atheist, he defined biology as the study of things that have the appearance of having been designed for a purpose.
Exactly.
Now, that doesn't prove they were designed, but I think it's an important thing to keep in mind. And then in a lot of ways, I think it's fair to say that the burden of proof that it's not designed, you could say, really should be on their shoes. Now we're willing to do a kind of best explanation. Let's just throw mm-hmm. both theories out there and let them compete on an equal playing field. Mm-hmm. And we're convinced that we would win in that even fight. What we aren't willing to do is let the Darwinists win by defining the game. They want to define design
exactly
out of the courtroom.
What is it in the culture? Because you're a fellow, you're senior fellow in the Center for Science and Culture. What is it in the culture you think makes it so important to talk about this issue? Now, we got to take a break here in just a second. So no matter how far down the road you get here, it wouldn't be far enough to get it. But we got a whole segment coming for you to answer this question. Why is this so important? Well, I mean, why not just say, look, they believe in evolution, we believe in intelligent design, whatever. Just make your pick. Just, you know, go to church, be a nice person, all that kind of stuff. There's some reason that this is really important, and I agree, it's very important, but I kind of want to have a conversation about why it's so important and the impact that our view on this issue has on the rest of the way we see the world. Again, Jonathan Witt, Senior Fellow for the Center for Science and Culture with the Discovery Institute, is my guest. We'll be back with more in just a second. I'm speaking with Jonathan Witt, Senior Fellow for the Center with the Center for Science and Culture of the Discovery Institute. I asked a question just before the break, Jonathan, which I'm going to get you to answer. But on the way to that answer, if you don't mind, you mentioned an ID Education Day coming up at Park Cities Baptist Church. You guys are hosting at Park Cities Baptist Church. Tell us again when that is and who might be interested in coming.
Yeah, that's March 23rd. And it starts at 9:45 a.m. at Park Cities Baptist.
Which is a Friday, March 23rd.
Yeah, it's a Friday. Okay. It goes through from 9:45 to 2:30. You can go to discovery.org/ID.
Perfect.
And you should be able to find more information about that. It's either free or like $5. But we're going to have some great scientists, guys that are really good, too, at communicating to a broad audience.
Perfect.
So it's going to be a great day. I'll be there.
Okay. So the big question I asked is simply, why is this so important to you? Why do you think it's so important in the culture? What view is held regarding evolution, intelligent design, or whatever? Why not just, you know, leave it behind and focus on other things?
Well, the short answer is that the truth matters. And the evidence points to the truth is that the universe is designed, life is designed. So just because we cherish truth, it's important. But beyond that, there are a number of negative cultural effects of believing that that human beings evolve through a random, purposeless, blind, ultimately meaningless process. Mm-hmm. So you have philosophers like Will Provine, who is very frank about this. He died not too long ago of cancer, but he said, some of these, my fellow atheists that try to dress up things and say, oh, no, there's meaning and purpose. No, not really. Once you believe in full-blown Darwinian materialism, there's no room for purpose and meaning because you've gotten rid of, you know, the humans aren't made in the image of God. They're just a product of blind processes. There's not an eternal soul. There's not free will. Those are things that exist in a spiritual realm that materialism denies. And Richard Dawkins, he said, Darwinism allowed one to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. Before Darwinism, they really didn't have mm-hmm. any kind of even minimally plausible explanation for the apparent design that you see in biology. So it has all these implications. You know, in our book, Mahdi shares, you know, students who would write, you know, essays and talk about how, man, I think life's meaningless. I learned that from evolution. Now you do have theistic evolutionists mm-hmm. who will try to marry.
This is what I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
So where do you put that? Where do you put that category?
Yeah, and in fact, I know some God-fearing, you know, Christ-loving theistic evolutionists. Mm-hmm. But
so do I.
Yeah.
So do I.
But I don't think it's an ultimately coherent position, and I think they just kind of live in tension, or they kind of, you know, put the science in a box and their theism in a box and don't really try to reconcile them. The evidence, I don't think the scientific evidence does not point toward evolution. What you often get is somebody that's in the liberal arts mm-hmm. who, oh, I heard that they've proved evolution. I'm not into science.
So now I have to find a resolution.
Right. And then you'll get scientists who, they do really good experimental biology, say, or maybe they're in nursing or maybe, you know, something like that. But they haven't focused a lot of their energies on origin science, which actually has some overlapping but distinct methodologies. It's an abductive argument rather than inductive in certain ways. And so they actually don't get a lot from Darwin's theory of evolution. There was an NAS scientist, Philip Scale, who went around and interviewed a lot of his fellow, you know, top scientists and asked them, how would your breakthroughs in your research have been different if you didn't know anything about Darwinism? And all of them admitted it wouldn't have been different at all. Now, Darwinism will come in as an explanatory gloss after the fact.
To make it fit the meta-narrative.
Yeah, meta-narrative. But in terms of actually driving, places where it did drive, it made them think much of our DNA was junk, for instance.
Uh-huh,
that turned
right.
out to be false.
Right.
They'll say, well, look, there's DNA that's common throughout lots of different animals and plants. That fits with common descent, fits with Darwinism. That also fits with common design,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Sure, obviously.
Car manufacturer reuses wheels in different kinds of car. Doesn't mean one evolved from the other.
Again, the book is called Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. One of the authors, Jonathan Witt, was my guest today. Jonathan, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Go look up the book and get it, Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Rob Collingsworth, thanks for producing. See you next time.
That was Criswell College President Barry Creamer interviewing Jonathan Witt, co-author of Heretic, One Scientist's Journey from Darwin to Design. Find the book at Amazon. And if you have already purchased and looked at the book, please consider leaving an Amazon review and sharing your thoughts about the book on social media. Help spread the word that nature points to a designer. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.